You're listening to the Motorsport 101 podcast. Coming up, an exciting review of the Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach, as well as the inaugural Rome Formula E Prix.
You are the world champion!
Welcome to the Motorsport ASMR podcast featuring the subtle tones of me, Andre Harrison.
It's late night with Motorsport 101.
Yo, I swear it sounded like we were about to like start a poker broadcast on ESPN2.
We're gonna burn rubber all night long.
You can't be serious.
And Phil Hellmuth's having another meltdown. Got beat on the river.
Fucking idiot from East, from Northern Europe.
Where's John Boyce?
Gus Hansen's going all in on the 10th consecutive hand. Ooh, buddy.
Okay, we should stop this. This is getting way too meta. Like, people are not going to understand this.
Don't worry, it's fine. I'm mostly just using this voice because I can't talk really loud due to reasons. It's fine.
That's cool.
I guess we should introduce ourselves now.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad idea. It's like, can I have my podcast back? Is
yes,
that
that's
okay?
Fine. That's fine.
Good. Yeah, welcome to episode 134 of Motorsport 101. While RJ tries to find a way to calm down his new boner, let me introduce the rest of the panel. First of all, we have Ryan King. Hello, sir.
Yes. I'm here for the wild, fun occasion of talking about motorsport that isn't Formula One. Praise be.
Praise be. Diddy. That's always a fun time indeed. Christopher the Holiday is here as well. Hello again, Chris.
Hey, this is going to be a really, really fun week because tomorrow I drive out to Birmingham.
What could that possibly be for, I wonder?
Barber.
Of course.
The Honda IndyCar Grand Prix of Alabama, which I'll be at.
Yep, featuring new University of Alabama head coach, Joseph Newgarden.
I wish.
You mean Nick Saban's finally stepped down and gone to the NFL?
Yep, gotta replace his best friend. Bill Belichick needed someone to finish out the job.
as you do. And, of course, Mr. ASMR himself, Mr. Roger O'Connell.
Hello, folks. Yes, you can come say hi. At the Honda Indy Grand Prix of Alabama, I will mostly be just losing my bird. Somewhere around the back straightaway at the high-speed chicane in the final sector, because that's probably the most visually appealing point of the track, because it also gives you the vantage point of seeing the passes at the hairpin. It's gonna be a good time. I may get drunk. It just depends. I'm most likely getting drunk.
So, without further ado, get into this rather stacked show. Actually, we're gonna be talking about the 2018 IndyCar Grand Prix of Long Beach this past weekend, and we'll be heading over to Rome for their Formula E Prix as well. As turns out, RJ's got a brand new favorite TV program. More on that later. But in the meantime, places you can catch us, we're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter @motorsport_101. And our personal handles are @Harrison101HD, @RyanEricKing, @RJOConnell, and @CTheHarday. And if you really, really like us, you can back us on Patreon at patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to both this show and Bike Live, which there'll be another episode of later this week. Talking about all the action from World Superbikes in Aragon, all of the British Superbikes from Brands Hatch as well, and seemingly the alarming news on the horizon that has come in through in the last hour or so. It looks like Keelan Sofoglu is about to announce his retirement.
What?
From World Super. Yeah, it's like apparently he's called an emergency press conference for Friday at Assen, because World Superbikes are doing back-to-back rounds this weekend. They're in Assen. And he's called a press conference. It looks like the five-time World Supersport Champion is about to announce his retirement. That's what our man Greg Haynes is reporting today for MCN. Looks like it could be the end of the man's legendary Supersport career. Looks like one injury too many after his massive crash he had at Phillip Island at the start of the season. So most likely more about that on Bike Live by the time that goes out. So without further ado, let's get into it. And after this brief musical interlude, we'll get into the 2018 IndyCar Grand Prix of Long Beach. Except the 2018 IndyCar Grand Prix of Long Beach, one of the blue ribbon events on the IndyCar calendar that isn't the Indianapolis 500. Fantastic turnout from what I was told. Biggest attendance for Long Beach over the weekend since the kart days. So, yeah, fans turned out in force for this one. And they got to witness quite a driving exhibition at the front, King.
They got to witness a beat 'em down.
They got to witness one of their boys, Californian Alexander Rossi, take home the victory from pole.
Leading 71 laps out of 85. It was a thrashing, to say the least.
That was a molly whopping.
Yep, like, it's... And he didn't have it go completely his own way with the amount of cautions in that race, especially in the second half of that going, but it's worth pointing out, every restart he had was perfect, and he was able to just break out three or four car lengths off the restart and always caught the field without napping. And right at the end as well, when Will Power was trying to chase him down at the end of the race, basically tactically bullied Power into burning up his push to pass right at the end, had the advantage and won fairly comfortably. Never really looked like he wasn't going to win that one. But it's like, this is Rossi's third victory. I mean, we've known about the Indy 500 for some time. Watkins Glen last year, his third series victory. And King, like, the way he's going, he's now just becoming really, really good everywhere now at this point.
Yeah, and it's not like it's some random new venue on the circuit. He's winning at prestigious stops on the calendar: Indianapolis, Watkins Glen, now Long Beach.
All former Formula One tracks.
Yeah, that is also true. All for Formula One tracks.
Someone should pencil them in for Detroit, then.
Yeah, you're right.
Now, granted, Belle Isle did not hold an F1 race, but there was talk about possibly bringing F1 to Belle Isle because a lot of people weren't too happy with them being downtown.
It's almost
so
like...
So it counts.
Yeah, it's almost like he's fulfilling that prophecy from that old issue of Road and Track magazine when he was still at Caterham, claiming that Alexander Rossi would be the next Mario Andretti. I don't have that high praise for him yet, but he's clearly showing he has the ability.
So Alexander Rossi has started the season with three consecutive podium finishes. If you go back to Toronto of 2017, which was really his coming out party of, like, him being a breakout straw. This is the ninth breakout star.
Breakout straw. That's a thing.
I've had a long day at work. So in the last nine races, he's finished second, sixth, third, sixth, win at Watkins Glen, crap race at Sonoma, third, win at Long Beach. That's a good run of form.
I don't think there's a guy in IndyCar that's got that sort of run of form at the moment.
Only Joseph Newgarden can match it.
Yeah, it's incredible. Like I said, I said towards the end of last season, the guy is looking like he's going to be an elite. He's already an elite driver in the series now. He's probably on par with the very best the series has to offer, and it's starting to feel that way because, like, this is no longer a surprise seeing that it's Rossi at the front. He's just this good, and he won that race with ease in the end. And again, held off a very, very strong Will Power. Again, Will Power is Will Power. He's good almost everywhere at this point as well. And, held him off. Tactically was sublime. Took advantage of the cautions. The restarts are on the money pretty much every single time. Fantastic victory, all told. Just brilliant stuff from Alex Rossi. Again, never looked like he wasn't going to win that race. Yeah. Awesome scenes.
Like, strangely enough, In a slight tangent, this race really kind of echoed the race at Long Beach 10 years ago, the IndyCar finale, which, you know, if you haven't seen on Racer.com, Marshall Prude's video about it, where Will Power had pretty much a dominant win. He started fourth, but he had the lead by the end of the, by turn one, and he led throughout, and they kind of jokingly said that at that time, Will Power was only going to be good on road and street courses, and Marshall kind of pointed out, well, you're pretty much an oval master now, Will. And yeah, Will Power, sure. Will Power is good everywhere. And if you can go toe to toe with Will Power and come out head and shoulders better, like head and shoulders, like down the road past him, you're definitely a star in the series.
That's Will Power, yeah. one of the winningest drivers in the last decade of competition.
Absolutely.
And a former series champion. And probably the most successful driver, apart from one driver that we will talk about, who has yet to win the Indianapolis 500.
Marco?
We'll get to that one. But as you said, like Will Powell's not had the best of luck so far this season, but that was a very solid second place for him. And like going back to Rossi real quick as well, I mean, again, like Rossi was the dominant dude pretty much all weekend as well. Like he qualified on pole position.
He was quickest in two out of the three pre-qualifying practice sessions, and he was quickest in the morning warm-up on Sunday morning. He had everything going for him. The only thing that was going to stop Alexander Rossi was going to be Alexander Rossi. Just had it all hooked up.
Yeah, that's indeed. One of the things I really enjoy about IndyCar. This, despite it being a quote-unquote spec series, once you can have dominant performances where you realize from the start of the weekend one guy has everything dialed in, and he's going to go out there and dominate, whether it be, you know, Joseph Newgarden 2 years ago, no, well, 3 years ago at Iowa, or, you know, Rossi this weekend. To have a guy you know after the practice sessions is going to be the guy out there, the guy to beat, and hands down, he's going to have to beat himself for someone to get past him.
And how much you got to think it's got to burn up Will Power, knowing that after Rossi and Power's little kerfuffle at Phoenix, that Power just couldn't get past him, couldn't get that one up on him, just couldn't do it.
He'll be infuriated knowing what Will Power's like. He'll be pissed. But I think once he gets his head down and sleeps on it, he'll realize second was still a very nice result to take here, get his championship back on track a little bit. Not the best start from Will. Going down one step further on the podium. Hello and welcome back to said podium, Ed Jones. His first podium since the Indy 500 last year. It's his first on a road course, and God, he was right there in the thick of it. King ran the right place at the right time, huh?
Yeah, like you know, he had an off weekend at Phoenix, and that sort of was to be expected. But it really seems that, you know, maybe Chip did pick a winner.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to disagree with you being on. He picked a plucky Brit.
I'm gonna have to disagree with you about him having an off weekend at Phoenix, though, because Ed Jones was actually running in second place when he had his incident, and was probably on par, you know, on track to get a podium if, you know, he wouldn't have gone up high while trying to lap Spencer Pigot. But Jones has done a fantastic job all year long, in my opinion. He's kept his nose clean for the most part, except for that whole little deal in Phoenix. Really, Chip has nothing to complain about, in my opinion.
Indeed. Yeah,
it's easy to see that Ed Jones was everything he was and a little bit more than what was shown last year. That he's starting to come into his own as an IndyCar driver, where it feels like it genuinely feels like he's going to be a constant threat for podiums, and maybe one day, maybe even this season, I'm going out there and reaching, maybe he could sneak a win in.
Yeah, again, he's only 23 years old.
You said it in the preview.
Yes, I did say it on the preview that I said that Ed Jones will get one win this year.
Yeah. We'll go back to the rundown of the actual final result a little bit later on, but this race kind of went semi-viral for one big reason. And arguably the pass of the year in all of motorsport so far. Seabass himself, Sebastian Bourdais, with an unbelievable overtake into turn one of Long Beach.
Basically giving Sir Isaac Newton the middle finger.
Let me go ahead and break this down. So it's about lap 48. Sebastian Bourdais is coming up, trying to pass. I'm trying to make out who this car is up in front. It's Scott Dixon. He has he's on the outside of a three wide sandwich going into turn one, where obviously getting two cars in is going to be a stretch. Bourdais has the outside line here, and he's going to use all the track and then some to cut around the outside of the lap car of Spencer Pigot and the car of Scott Dixon for position. While under braking, he swoops around the outside of Dixon and cuts underneath the inside of Matthias Laiss's lap car and just nails the corner with no drama.
So,
astonishing. An astonishing bit of car control. I've watched it five times over, and I still don't know how he was able to thread the needle like that.
That is not only truly, that is truly the skill of someone who's won around this track three times.
Yeah, you know, it's the worst four-time consecutive champion in modern-day motorsport, as RJ would say. Yeah, quite right. So this is just a phenomenal piece of car control. I've never seen anything like that before. He's able to come around the outside of a free wide and still dive it down the inside of the lap car as well. Just unbelievable skill. But, and I have to give a little bit of credit to Paul Tracy here. He spotted this almost immediately. Guys, didn't he cross the pit lane line to do that? And I'm like, oh no, why does Paul Tracy not like fun? Why does Paul Tracy not like fun things?
Yeah. If it was anyone else, he'd probably be like, that was awesome.
But of course, like, you know, like, we all forget that there's still, I think, a smudge of bad blood there. Because Paul Tracy pointed that out almost too quickly. He pointed that out. But yes, sadly, Sebastian Bourdais put two wheels over the blue, hardly recognisable pit exit line, which is not allowed in IndyCar. You're not allowed to cross that pit line to make a pass, which is what Bourdais did, and he was told to drop a position, so he had to give the position back to Scott Dixon.
And he just decided to do that move all over again.
Yeah, he just dove it down the inside,
time around.
I thought that was hilarious, by the way. I tweeted, like, I was watching the fast-forward version of the race on YouTube a couple of days ago again, just to gather my bearings, and I remember tweeting, I was like, oh my god, he just swept past Dixon again? Like, somebody tell Emma that, like, Scott Dixon belongs to him now. Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So now for the second...
Emma was pissed.
So now for the second time in 3 years, we have a blend line pit exit controversy at Long Beach, if you remember the conclusion of 2016.
Oh, God.
And both of them involved a very irate Emma Davies Dixon.
Yeah.
Apparently, Ryan Scott can do no wrong.
Yeah, because, like, you noticed it during the race where, like, earlier Long Beach Grand Prix, you would notice that, you know, cars leaving the pit lane would, you know, cross the line a little bit early. You definitely saw it this year. Everyone made sure they were going to the exact end of the pit exit line, then going on to the rest of the racing surface.
Well, there's an orange line painted, and your transponder had to actually go over that line for you to be considered to have exited the pits properly.
Yeah, because they instituted that the race after, because I remember Barber was the first race they had the timing line for the transponders on pit exit.
Yeah, it's like I love that we all pointed this out. It's like, I think we all just collectively had enough of Scott Dixon's so this is partner in crime Emma basically ranting and raving at race control, talking about how illegal that was. I think we have a Discord server where we talk about these things all the time, right? And, like, I think we collectively just went, you know what, sod this. we've had enough. Our patience has snapped.
Yeah, because, like, we all knew he broke the rule. That's unfortunate. And kind of just, like, moved on with our lives. But sure. No. Mrs. Dixon was not having any of it.
I think she's done her usual trick of deleting a bunch of tweets regarding this after the fact. But Yeah, she had no problems with the repeat pass like a lap later, which I thought was hilarious. But, yeah, like, just stop. Emma, stop, please. You're embarrassing. You're embarrassing yourself here. It's not pretty, okay? Like,
you've been here for years. You know how the sport works,
right? It's like it's not like it's your first weekend, love. Seriously, like you know better than this. Ugh, just
right.
Just infuriating.
Yeah,
but, go on, Jack.
Yeah, it. This was gonna get better for Sebastian Bourdais until about lap number 60, when his Dale Coyne Racing teammate Zachary Clackery DeMackery hit the wall in turn 10 as he was having a pretty solid day. That caused the pit lanes to be closed. Bourdais and Ditson came down while the pits were closed. Both of them were given drive-through penalties, and now Sebastian Bourdais, having made two insane passes around his rival, has to do all that work all over again just to get back up in front.
Hang on a second. Actually, Bourdais was not given a drive-through penalty. What happened
was... Oh,
yes,
you're right.
So Bourdais went through the pits, and he did not take service because the pits were closed. Dixon did take service, even though he was behind Bourdais, and Dixon was hit with a drive-through penalty for taking service in a closed pit.
Okay, see that's right. Yeah, Chris was actually there. He knows.
Yeah.
It helps.
How was Long Beach, by the way?
Oh, gorgeous. And, of course, I flew back to Indianapolis Monday night, got there at 1 o'clock in the morning Tuesday morning, and it was 35 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, dear. Welcome back to the north.
Oh, yeah, and I leave in about 13 hours for Birmingham, so I'm looking forward to that drive.
Birmingham. So then, as Seb was once again trying to get his race back on track, Jordan King decided he wanted to be the hero of the story.
Yep.
Trying to overtake Sebastian Bourdais in the hairpin, which he apparently had done to a couple of drivers early in the race, but unfortunately he didn't exactly make this work. He hit Sebastian, turned him around, at which point Ryan Hunter-Reay hit him, as well as the plot quickens, stopping behind him, causing a three-car traffic jam, which brought out the full-course yellow.
Ah, the old Robert Alon special.
Yep, the old, you know, Long Beach hairpin traffic jam.
Does anyone want me to read out the Bourdais post-race statement?
Oh, yes please. Because Sebastian Bourdais is a spicy quote.
He's my champion.
if you may, ladies and gentlemen, get your hot chocolate out. I'd advise you get some marshmallows in there. Settle down in front of the fire as I go for the dramatic reading, or rereading, I should say, of Sebastian Bourdais' post-race comments.
Wait, should we have RJ read
that? And I quote... Are you dissing my reading voice here, Chris? Is that it?
I think we should have it.
Go ahead. It's Dre's podcast. Dre can do whatever he wants.
All right.
Defy me again, Chris. We sin the sin bin for eternity.
I haven't left it.
It was.
That's a secret. He's always in the sin bin.
I respect.
Man,
I live here.
Get comfy. It was such a frustrating day. Full attack, really good car. The Sealmaster, got to get the sponsor in, Honda number 18 was really hooked up. I had a pretty good feeling in the warm-up, and the condition stayed the same for the race. It was a tough call to start on Firestone Blacks, but I was confident it was the right thing to do as long as I could hold my position at the start, and that is exactly what happened. Thankfully, the start was stretched, so I wasn't under attack until I was up to speed. Then I really started to push hard because I could tell the guys on red tyres... were in conservation mode, so I started to think this could be a pretty good day. I passed a bunch of cars, and when I got to Dixon, this is when I held station. He was driving really well. He had the pace because he had saved his tyres. He got to the first pit sequence, and Dixon, I am sure, short-filled and jumped power. We stayed on schedule and put on red tyres, and at that point, it looked like the race was coming our way. Clearly, Rossi was on a different planet, but other than him, we were right there. I got Dixon on the restart, and race control deemed that a violation. I thought that was interesting because I'm not quite sure what I was supposed to do. I was committed. There was room and he didn't see me, so he came down on me and pushed me into the pit lane. If you force me into the pit lane, I'm not sure it is your responsibility. because I also got rather upset, so I passed him right back. I was pretty happy about that. Then we were just cruising. This is where it gets fun. Unfortunately, as a group, we took a chance to stay out too long, and then it went yellow. Race control could have waited a couple of seconds before closing the pit, but they didn't, and we went to the back where we had to race idiots. I was racing Kimball side by side, and he gives me no room, and he bent both of my toe links on the right side. It was pretty much game over from there. I made a mistake trying to pass him again later into turn 9. The car wouldn't turn anymore. Then in the next corner, Jordan King felt like a hero and took us out. After that, I had to deal with another idiot, Matthias Leist, who tried to crash both of us a couple of times. There really wasn't much to salvage after that. It's really disappointing. The car was good, I drove the wheels off it, passed a bunch of guys, and we have nothing to show for it.
And that's the story of how Napoleon Bonaparte got sent into exile in St. Helena.
Seb would eventually finish in 13th place. But, oh dear. It's poor Seb. It's hard not to feel a bit bad for him after that spectacular pass. And just, it just wasn't his day after that. Just beaten up, taken out, pushed into a pit lane, driven into a closed pit lane, and then bumped again at the end. Oh, poor Seb. What a shame.
I remarked during the race, once again, that Sebastian Bourdais is the most underappreciated all-time great in IndyCar history, who has so many accomplishments outside of the sport. This is the best that he's ever been, and now that he's in his old age and just gives zero fucks now, this is the best Sebastian Bourdais.
Oh, it's way more fun this way with Seb. It is way more... like, you can see, like, King is crying happy tears right now as we speak. It's delicious. it is good times indeed for Seb Bourdais. And again, he's shown his class already on so many occasions. The championship already is playing out quite similar to last year, where Seb is punching above his weight and, you know, in the championship mix early go. We'll get to the standings on that later on. But, speaking of bad luck as well, our beloved new adopted Canadian son at SPM, Robert Wickens, didn't have such a good day either, unfortunately.
The gearbox control unit decided that the gearbox should remain in fifth gear, which, unfortunately, he would not have had a drive similar to Michael Schumacher in the 1994 Spanish Grand Prix. Instead, it was going to be just one of pure misery, and he finished, I believe it was 9 laps down.
9 laps down and 22nd.
Not good.
Not good at all.
It's like, can somebody catch Robert Wickens a break, please? Like, yanked out of that first win at St. Pete after the Rossi incident we all know about. Yanked out of first place during Phoenix after a fantastic pit strategy call from Cindric on Newgarden's car, and now this. poor Wickens, catch a break, young fella.
Though he did get some measure of friend zone Alexander Rossi after that St. Petersburg pass. If you've seen the gif of Robert Wickens essentially doing like a double leg MMA takedown on Rossi in like some plays, it's wonderful.
Yes.
If I remember right, I might have seen where that actually was. It was actually at the Indianapolis airport.
Yeah, it was at the airport. And I thought like Wickens was gonna go full Canadian and pull Rossi's hoodie over his head.
Yeah, or just do like Happy Gilmore. I'll just yank the hoodie off and then punch him on the way down. Oh, dude, that would have been fun. We could have broken out the Motorsport 101 Fight Club klaxon. That would have been great. But it's only a mini version on this occasion. But that was a fun gif. You should find it on the internet if you haven't already. Good news for Andretti. Two cars in the... Like, we have three cars, technically, I should say, in the top six. Not only Alex Rossi winning, but, well, we've had Elf on the Shelf, but get ready for Veach at the Beach. Zach Veach in fourth place. Brilliant result for the young'un.
And it was... he came back from 16th on the grid to finish fourth. Our friend of the show, Elizabeth Worth, brought a special t-shirt for him and everything. It was a good time.
Yeah, it must have been a fantastic week for Zach Veach. Unfortunately, at the start of the week, he had to vacate his Raw Tag Team Championship. But, you know, the fourth place makes up for it.
I actually showed him that tweet on my phone, and he actually got a good laugh out of it. So, full marks to Zach Veach for having a sense of humor about that. And, of course, one thing he also told me on Saturday, The team actually had a mistake in the car's setup on Friday. They had to fix it on Friday afternoon, and he had to kind of relearn how to drive it, which he figured that out pretty quickly because he, you know, got fourth place.
Brilliant. Brilliant stuff from the youngster there on that one. Just outstanding stuff. Brilliant stuff to get in there. Oh my god, sorry, I think there was dots on in the background and Gary Anderson was one shot. It was one dot short of a nine darter. It caught the side of my eye for just a second there.
I was just following up with that. Yeah. I was just like, oh man.
I was just trying to hold it down there. I was trying to keep my composure there, but that was so hilarious.
It's pretty awesome. Zach Veach going from pit reporter 1 year to his first top five finish the next at the very same venue. Zach Veach has worked very hard for this opportunity. I'm glad that he's having success.
He's done a good job so far. Hasn't really put a wheel wrong at all, really. Another thing I think we ought to mention, Jack Harvey got a 12th place finish for Schmidt Peterson, and Kyle Kaiser got Jungos' best finish at, I think it was like 16th or so.
Nice.
Funny thing about those two guys is the last time that they were both in Long Beach, Kaiser was riding the back of Harvey's car as in the 2015 Indy Lights race. He missed his breaking point and punted Harvey out of first position.
No. Oh, buddy.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Yeah, don't. Otherwise, you'll be that'll be your introduction to YouTube fame, of course. Not really all that well. But Kaiser, it was his first IndyCar race in the state of California. He's from Santa Clara, California. The only time he put a wheel wrong was in qualifying when he hit the wall in the first session. So other than that, he was okay. Got the car home.
Yeah, now he gets to make way for Rene Binder at Barber.
No, Binder's not doing Barber.
I thought he was doing Barber this weekend.
I don't think he was doing Barber. At least I didn't see it on the entry list.
I can check and see. No, I got the Spotters guide up here in the Discord chat. It's let me see here.
Yeah,
no, he is doing it. Wow, that's surprising. I didn't think he was doing Barber. Wow. All right, drink. Chris was wrong.
It's okay.
Empty your glasses, people.
I'm more wrong most of the time. It's fine.
Yeah. Further back, and I know she's listening in the background as we speak this. Ladies and gentlemen, Marco Andretti back in the top six.
Yep.
Yay!
Started.
Yay.
Woo!
Yes, he came back from 20th on the grid to finish sixth. Marco always seems to do reasonably well at street courses these days. Sometimes. It's a good result for him. Andretti Autosport has just got everything going. Poor Ryan Hunter-Reay, though. It's as it was said. Ryan Hunter-Reay, it seems like he's kicked a black cat into a mirror that was located under seven unlucky ladders.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, he celebrated by throwing a salt shaker over his shoulder.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that the comparison is a direct one-for-one. It's not nearly as bad, but it really feels that Rossi to Hunter-Reay is like Brady to Bledsoe. Like, it's... it really feels like it really feels like this is Alex Rossi's team now, and Hunter-Reay is going to have to deal with
it. It's starting to feel that way.
Yeah.
Because remember, who was the one Andretti that was a title contender last year at the final round? It was Alex Rossi. Kind of says it all, really. It's like the pendulum has swung in that team, and it's like Rossi is now leading the charge in the 27.
Rossi being a Pats fan would definitely appreciate this.
Yes.
I forgot he's a Pats fan. Well, at least there's something redeeming about his character. not such a good day for Hunter-Reay. He eventually limped home to 20th in the end as well. We've got to talk about a little bit about Turn 1 as well, because if there's one guy who endorses the sanctity and cleanliness of the race, the Van Uber, that's a wipeout joke there, of IndyCar drivers himself... Graham Rahal is all here about the clean racing unless he plows into the back of Simon Pagenaud 10 seconds into the Grand Prix. Well done, Graham. Nice to see you were duly punished for it, and he ended up finishing in fifth. God damn it!
With five pit stops. With five pit stops, including a drive-through penalty for avoidable contact on lap five.
You want to hear the saddest bot score line off of this IndyCar bot score report? Simon Pagenaud's elapsed race time, 0.1059 seconds.
He crossed the start line. God bless him.
Yeah. So Dre, we've gotten through the Chinese Grand Prix. Now we've gotten through Long Beach. Who's higher on your get hit list? Max Verstappen or Graham Rahal?
Oh, it's Graham Rahal. The thing is, I'm not even thinking about it. So, like, at least Verstappen, like, has taken due punishment by getting bollocked in the media, even to the point where his own dad is telling him, okay, son, wind it down a bit, all right? And he has been punished on two occasions so far this season. He's actually duly not had the luck on his side since the start of the season began. Graham Rahal, I think, is what, third in the championship right now?
Yeah, he's third in the championship.
How?
You know, Bobby, where are you at, Bobby?
Mr. Consistency, and he's going back to one of his favorite tracks.
Yeah, Graham Rahal is now top of my shit list. He really is.
And Simon Pagenaud only has a single top 10 finish at Phoenix to show for all of his efforts.
Yeah.
Indeed. But in Brighton news, he was able to sign Joseph Newgarden's mother. No, I'm not making this up. Check his Instagram page if you don't believe me. At Simon Pagenaud.
There were some undertones going on.
Because
messages.
Yes. Like the fact that Graham Rahal and Simon Pagenaud were also teammates at Penske in the IMSA North American Endurance Cup, where they drive with Elio Castroneves and Juan Montoya, Ricky Taylor, and Dane Cameron. Ooh, that's going to be a very awkward 6 hours at the Glen coming up.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be many conversations there. Like Rahal's going to be the odd one out that's been bundled into the group project at the last minute. With half the work already been done. So it's not going to be a good look for there for Graham right now. But you know what, Graham's like, probably just want to give a shit. We'll just go around saying, yeah, I'm the best driver on this team. We're all going to drive clean and follow standards, everybody. So that's fun. One more quick note as well. Shout out and congratulations to Carlin. Their first top 10 finish as a full-time runner in the series. Charlie Kimball coming home in 10th place. He has been upgraded again from Draconian to slightly above average Kimball.
Slightly
congratulations,
above average
Charlie.
Kimball.
He's back! He's back for 2018. You've upgraded him back on the scale of Draconian after, you know, almost decapitating, you know, Elio Castroneves' head in last year. He's like, well done, Charlie. You're moving up in the world again. Good lad.
I'm pretty sure Matt Chilton was having a good run as well, but didn't quite pan out. He got caught up in stuff and ended up 17th.
Indeed. Nice to see Carlin taking some positive steps forward as well. As the series goes on. Right, quick rundown of the full race result. Alex Rossi takes the win by 1.2 seconds over Will Power. As Chris mentioned, 71 out of the 85 laps were led by Alex Rossi. Insane stuff indeed. Ed Jones rounded off the podium a further 8 seconds back in third. Veach at the Beach in fourth, ahead of Draconian Rahal in fifth. Marco Andretti, sixth. Joseph Newgarden, just a very quiet weekend from him, really. Never really looked like he was in it. But seventh place, solid points.
The one will be defended. The one will be defended. And he set fastest lap of the race as well.
Every little helps. Tony Kanaan in eighth. Is that? I want to say that's Foyt's best result of the season so far.
No, that's,
I want to say.
That's his joint best results. He's had two top tens in a row. He's solidly top 10 in the points right now, I believe.
Yep.
Not bad from the old boy.
Well,
the old goal's
no, he's
than
just
there.
Outside the points, but
he's 11th.
Close enough. Tony Kanaan in 8th place, another solid result from him. James Hinchcliffe in 9th, not able to defend his Long Beach title this time around. As mentioned, Charlie Kimball rounding off the top 10. Sebastian Bourdais's bitch finished in 11th place, ahead of Jack Harvey.
Oh my God.
Jesus Christ.
Love you, really, Scott. Jack Harvey in 12th for Michael Shang there. Sebastian Bourdais, the bitter Frenchman, in 13th place. Mateus Leist in 14th place. Spencer Biggott in 15th. Carl Kaiser in 16th place. Head of Chilton, Jordan King. Gabby Chavez in 19th. Ryan Hunter-Reay in 20th. Ahead of maybe later Sato. Robert Wickens, as mentioned, the gearbox issue. Finished 12 laps off the top in the end. Zachary Clement de Mello in 23rd. And Simon Pagenaud, whose race lasted an entire tenth of a second. back of the field indeed. Looking at the championship real quick, Alex Rossi leads the championship for the first time in his IndyCar career on 126 points. He's 22 points ahead of Joseph Newgarden in second. The one is being defended reasonably well still. Graham Rahal is in third place. I'm not bitter about this at all.
33 points out of the lead, and then we got ourselves a good dice for third in the championship right now after three races.
Indeed. I have Sebastian Bourdais only 5 points further back in fourth on 88. James Hinchcliffe in fifth on 83. And then Scott Dixon in sixth on 79. So that I make that six different teams in the first six positions in the championship. Kind of bonkers, I have to say. Ryan Hunter-Reay 7th on 73. Will Power 8th on 72. Ed Jones deep into the top 10 in 9th place on 69 points. Nice. And Marco Andretti rounds off the top 10 in 10th with 68. Just a point ahead of Toby Kanaan and 2 points ahead himself of Robert Wickens in 12th place on 65. IndyCar, as mentioned, will return this weekend at the Grand Prix of Alabama in Barber Motorsports Park. One of our favourite rounds on the calendar. RJ's effectively home race, so we'll probably be hearing all of the stories from that on next week's show.
And the home Grand Prix for Joseph Newgarden, who was born just 2 hours up the road and has won two of the last three runnings of this event.
Hashtag Fort Newgarden.
The one will be defended. Oh, it's going to be a good time. I'm going to be there. Chris is going to be there. We're probably going to hang out. We may not. It's fine. We're going to have a good time regardless because it's going to be a good race. You're going to love it. Guarantee it. I would never steer you wrong.
They always produce good crowds there, which is funny because it was originally built as a motorcycle racing track.
Yeah.
Indeed.
I miss AMA Superbike so much.
Hey, we got Moto America now. It's fine.
It's not the same.
It's kind of the same.
It's not the same.
Yeah. 86,000 spectators at Long Beach. How much do you think Barber Motorsports Park can get in the gate this weekend?
Oh, somebody should try to get Nick Saban to show up.
I tell you what.
Can be Grand Marshal.
Well, so funny enough about that, at the Talladega race for NASCAR the very next weekend, Gus Malzahn from Auburn is going to be the Grand Marshal.
Pick a side, Barber.
Like you can't split this one down the riddle, people. Well, you're gonna have to pick a side. Pick a side
because back in 2013, Bo Jackson was the Grand Marshal.
And a couple
of years later, Bart Starr was the Grand Marshal.
Oh, so
can't wait.
So they're being neutral as all hell.
Exactly.
Yeah, no potential bias here whatsoever in the land of Alabama. But, we'll check back with IndyCar next week after Barber on next week's show, episode 135. So, after this quick musical interlude, we'll be back with Formula E.
Chris, wait a minute. Any last words before you have to leave us?
Well,
I was going to try and play into that, you know?
Well,
keep spoiling my thunder. So,
well, I do have some last words. So there were some other races at Long Beach that weekend. IMSA had their WeatherTech Sports Car Championship there.
The Bubba Burger Grand Prix in Long Beach.
Oh,
what a name.
What a name. And they also had historic Trans Am cars, which were awesome to see, some drifting. And then you had Robbie Gobby, Roden Gordon's Stadium Super Trucks. And one thing that that Stadium Super Trucks has taught me is that Robbie Gordon just does not care. So let me set this into proper context. There was a post-race press conference. They had the race on Saturday, then they had one on Sunday. And Matt Brabham did half of a lap on two wheels, which was very impressive, by the way. So he goes along and does this, victory lap, and they bring the podium guys up there to the press, to the media center, and also they brought Robbie Gordon. So I'm down looking at my computer trying to get a couple of things ironed out, and then I look up about a couple minutes later, and I see three women to Robbie's the left, and then three women to the right, and I start thinking, okay, this is interesting, and it ended up getting to the point where the press conference went on and dragged on so long, I ended up leaving the room because, you just couldn't get anything done. But that was very, very interesting, to say the least.
You got to see Alex Gurney drive one of his late father Dan's old Indy 500 cars around Long Beach as well.
It was actually Formula 5000. It was actually the very first car that ever took to the track in Long Beach in any practice session.
And built by All American Racers.
Yes, indeed.
I've still got to listen to the radio broadcast of the IMSA race. I heard it was a good time. It can't be as batshit crazy as the finish to last year's one was, though.
No, it wasn't. But it was still pretty good. It was still pretty good.
Nice.
So that being said, IndyCar is coming up next at Barber. I wouldn't pick against Joseph Newgarden to win if you're looking at doing your fantasy pick sometime soon. And I'm getting ready to get on out of here because I have something to go take care of in a little bit here. Also, last thing I'll mention before I head on out, ended up visiting the Nicholas Hunziker Automotive Art Facilities in Torrance, California. Picked up a pair of snazzy new driving shoes, which you can see on my Instagram, at C. DeHardy. And I hope that y'all, if y'all ever get a chance to go visit Long Beach, y'all take a visit out there because it is a fantastic facility. He does a lot of great work.
Awesome.
Indeed.
Awesome, awesome.
Well, that being said, guys, I'm going to go ahead and head on off. I have a couple of things to take care of, but we're going to bring Hazel in to take care of Formula E. Dre, thank you very much for having me on.
Always a pleasure, sir. See you next week.
Cheers.
Bye, Chris.
And end.
And now, after this quick musical interlude, we'll be back to talk about Formula E in Rome, which was fairly hectic, to say the least. And welcome back to part two of part two of this double header of Motorsport 101.
It's on one file.
That's the joke, King. Jesus.
we're heading into multi-part sagas now.
Yeah, I know, right? It's like every podcast will now follow a three-act structure. But
welcome to Motorsport 101 Adventures, Act 7, Part 5, Part 2.
Third chapter. But as Chris alluded to in the first part of this show, we have to swap presenters out. It's kind of funny how we can do that every once in a while. Power of editing. Cheers, Lewis. So Chris is out, but we've got another guest back in, and amazingly, she's not at an airport. I think RJ will supply ambience as time goes on for that one. So welcome back, Hazel Southwell, everybody.
Hello.
Welcome back. Do you feel like alien now you're doing the show? You're not...
It's a bit weird doing it from my own back garden. Just as dodgy.
You mean like how most podcasts are normally recorded?
In the back garden. Yeah, yeah, that's normal.
Yeah, of course. Like, I say roll with it, quite frankly.
Good afternoon, passengers. This is the pre-boarding announcement for Flight 89B to Rome. We're now inviting those passengers with small children and any passengers requiring special assistance to begin boarding at this time. Please have your boarding pass and identification ready. Regular for boarding will begin in approximately 10 minutes' time. Thank you for flying Motorsport 101 Airlines.
FR926 from Rome Ciampino says, if you're a totally useless person and have no idea what to do at a boarding gate, you should line up at 5 a.m. because that's perfect. That's the time when all the people have no idea what to do with boarding passes.
Good to know.
You should just get in the maximum amount of way. The maximum amount. Because that's going to get you on the airplane quicker.
Yep.
Do you need a passport? Oh, you shouldn't be in this queue. Like, I don't know if you heard, this queue is exclusively for people who have no idea what they're doing.
Oh, we're not supposed to learn how to airplane in media res?
Oh, no, no. If you're getting an early flight from Rome Ciampino, basically, you should be surprised by a passport and a boarding pass. You should be really startled by that. And you should have to go and find somebody else in a different queue to get your passport and boarding pass from, despite having sat in that queue for 45 minutes.
Jesus.
I need a Nobel Peace Prize.
Like, so, like, Hazel placed Archbishop Desmond Tutu, the peace envoy, at the moment now, because we didn't have to fight a bitch in the for a boarding pass in the queue. Fantastic. Should we talk a little bit about Formulary, ladies and gentlemen?
Yes.
I think we should. Because, boy, we had a barnstormer of a Romy pre, and, yeah, relative chaos even before the race. We have to talk a little bit about this in qualifying, because, like, this was crazy, to say the least.
crash. Shenanigans.
Yeah.
I mean, there were multiple shenanigans in qualifying.
Tell us more. I mean,
there was a shenanigans to let people out for qualifying.
That helps.
Which group qualifying is hard.
Yeah.
And it's especially hard when the start line is over 200 meters away from the finish line. So they were in time to cross the finish line. They were not in time to cross the start line.
Ah, I see.
So once again, because of the length of the pit lane, Formula E re-equalized the start and finish lines. And if you couldn't cross the start line, which is not the finish line, before the checkered flag, you couldn't complete your lap.
Oh my god, that sounds like so complicated.
That sounds like a hot mess.
But this is Formula E. This is Formula E. This is how it works. This is not the first time it's had this.
Because I'm so used to... Yeah, I'm so used to the IndyCar format for when the start finish line is different for qualifying. It's clearly like it's clearly marked that this is both the start and finish line for qualifying.
Oh no, it was. I mean, to be fair, both of these teams were edging it really hard. They were looking for a clean lap. And to do the final lap in Group 1, which we all know is Death Group in Formula E. We don't know if it was Death Group, except that those five in the championship who were once again Group 1. It is a lottery to
which
of the groups get in Group 1. I actually think they were... more fair. The qualifying order grouping that they're doing is more unfair.
Yeah, it is.
Because you see one about how he was five times in Group 1. It's because the bottom group won. And I believe that is happening. But the order has been quite, I think maybe it's just that the bottom group are Group 1. In which case, that is grotesquely unfair because it's basically taking who shit and putting.
I don't know why they
like. As far as I know, it's chance based.
Yeah, like I don't.
But it keeps being this.
Like I would,
and like I don't know.
I only approve of chance-based shenanigans when it comes to qualifying if there's like a giant spinning wheel involved.
Yeah, like it would be nice if they actually
the qualifying lottery because it basically was that. It was like they.
I want to see them go full Price is Right with this.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to see like full qualifying roulette. But I. Group 3 is generally the fastest. But in Rome, none of that was true. So traditionally, Group 1 is because it's developing. A clean line is developed to qualify in Super Bowl if you're in Group 1. They were the stars and didn't even manage to put a time in. Jerome D'Ambrosio, even on his 170 kilowatt lap, managed to qualify within the 110%, which is quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Which that was his out lap. That was his slow ass lap. But the fractions were so small, qualifying. So, Andre group qualifying led the field by putting in a lap where he found 0.4 in the tricky third sector, which is meant to be like impossible to do. So the third sector is 9 of the 21 corners. You shouldn't be able to find 0.4 in 9 corners. He did. And he managed to top the qualifying times in group qualifying. And then Felix Rosenqvist in the pole beat all of the lap records. So he holds the fastest timed lap of the Romy pre-circuit by a massive distance. With a 1:36.311.
Super pole.
You don't get a chance to warm up the tires, you don't get anything.
Super pole for a Super GT superstar.
Yeah. He did really well there. And yeah, he took pole by 0.7.
Right.
In races where there's been a bigger gap, but it's an enormous gap.
It is a big one. But I mean, Hazel, talk to me about like the narrow pit lane, because I know that Zoe.
Okay, so yeah, absolutely bonkers. So the pit lane was over a half a kilometre. I want you to think about that in the context of the fact that the track was as long. The pit lane was 510 meters long, and the pit lane, so onto the pit lane, really tight right angle into the pit lane, you have the Jaguar garage, you have the other rest of the bottom five from last year's teams championship ending in Neo, and then you have the safety car garage. You take a right angle. You have about 150 meters of single car file space. You have Techita, DS Virgin, Mahindra, Audi, massive gap, Renault. And then you have an extremely tight pit out. It was the most bizarre looking pit lane I'd ever seen. And Nelson Piquet Jr. said to me on Friday, it's normal. Nelson Piquet Jr. during the race left his garage without his seatbelt correctly buckled and was unable to return to the garage because he was in front of Andretti and they couldn't even push him. He was literally obstructing another team.
The funniest thing about that, seeing that, the funniest thing is seeing that in real time.
Which is an issue of the pit stop practice that is currently being done. Mm-hmm. But he, I nearly tried to corner him after the race, but he was in this towering rage.
But if there's one other thing I wanted to point out during that race as well. No, I love that the pit lane timer kept running. Like at one point it was like over 3 minutes and like, are they just going to leave the car there?
No, his official pit stop classification is 4 minutes.
Oh my God.
Yikes. Oh dear.
The fastest pit stop allegedly was Jeb's. Something like, I don't have it in front of me right now, but like 47 seconds. Something.
That's brisk.
Which is extremely fast to go 50 kilometers an hour, and it's over hot pit lane. Like a drive through here would have been brutal.
Yeah, I can imagine. Jeez.
Yeah, they should like.
No, I mean that's race. You play your over, which I also thought about, like Antonio Felix, a 10-second penalty before the so there was an incident in group. Antonio Felix Costa was released into Jose Maria Lopez. Lopez, quite rightly, to be honest, went absolutely spare because they both lost the chance to qualify. And it looked a lot like he punched Antonio. Apparently he didn't, but it looked a lot like he punched Antonio.
Is it time for the Fight Club clap, son?
Antonio, to be fair, immediately got out of his car and removed it from the Dragon. Like, he was pushing his car back from the Dragon car and trying to, like, salvage something. But both cars were out of contention for qualifying. And he was given a 10-second penalty, which is colossal. Penalty is like like by the time they finish, if there's 10 seconds from the leader to the end, that's a lot. Whereas like watching Max Verstappen be given 10 seconds in Formula One and lose one place.
Yes, we talked about it the last episode.
Yeah, that was fun.
But like, even so, it's a joke that the same penalties are applied. Yes. Like, because penalties in Formula E really mean something. Like, they really fuck up your entire race. Whereas in Formula One, it's like, well, he should have been given a drive-through and probably a 510-meter pit lane drive-through, you know. But yeah. So it was a gloriously unusual race. As Jean Todt said on the Friday in a press conference, Formula E is not normal.
And he was right.
Yes. So he was actually saying that people think, oh, it's normal that you can organize events in the city center. It's not normal, which is a great quote. And fantastic to take out of context, which obviously we all immediately did. Yeah, it's amazing that it was organised in Rome. So Alejandro and Jean Todt had the start of Formula E. They had only just managed to do it. One of those, Virginia Elena Raggi, who is the current mayor of Rome, who particularly wanted to do it. So all this fascist architecture, but it's not the classical architecture of Rome, it's the fascist architecture of Mussolini.
Yeah, it was clearly built in the 1930s.
Moving on to the race.
Yeah, we should definitely talk about the other good-looking, successful person that won the race.
Yo, you're watching Bird Up, the best show in Formula E.
I love it when Sam Bird wins. Like, he's just so happy.
It's his seventh win. It's his seventh career Formula E victory, and he's back in title contention.
Yeah, and it's scary to think.
What I wanted this year, what I desperately wanted more than anything else, was for a Sam and Jeb title race. And I thought I wasn't going to get it. I have moments where I haven't believed. But everything's coming out of my house. And like, maybe this one time, if I just hope, and like, I don't know, but this is Sam Jeb title race.
Yeah, we should rewind it back, because it didn't look like he was gonna have this just
kicking all kinds of ass out here on the track. Took pole, of course. Started the race very well. Looked like he was going to cruise to victory. Then in the final third of the race, he just gets bit too much of the curbs and breaks his suspension and my heart.
God, I felt shit watching Felix fall out. I felt shittier watching Mitch Evans ever.
Oh, poor
that,
Mitch
that
Evans.
That, to me, was the worst thing I've ever watched. Like, so he driver in Formula E, he is 23. He is a ween. He is GP2, and it was GP2 when he was in it.
Mm-hmm.
He had a dire year at Corval Jaguar and fourth place, albeit during a chaotic. But, like, he has, I know there are lots of people who are willing to shit on Mitch Evans, but he is really young. And okay, he said a 17 on spot on, so did I. But like, he's a really nice guy, and he's incredibly, and he spent basically the entire second stint of the race he's holding off one multiple-time Le Mans and Lucas Agassi, who is the current Formula E champion.
So RJ, could you recap what happened to Mitch Evans in the race for those who might have not seen the E-Prix?
Yeah, no, that's fine. So from the highlights perspective, Mitch Evans had basically been having the race of his life, briefly led during the pit exchange, looked like he was at least going to get a podium, and then in his defense of Andre Lotterer and Lucas Degrassi, which was very staunch defense, right, by the way, for the last three laps. Mitch, bruh, you just ran out of usable energy, my dude. And he slipped all the way down to ninth.
Oh,
out of a race that could have easily been a podium.
So what happened was Mitch, basically, I didn't speak to Mitch after the race. On a normal lap of a Formula E circuit, 5% is what you need. So 5% would be more than enough. And he started his last lap. And the last lap was when he lost 7 places. But he needed 7%. And I think he was, because he was fighting, he was mentally calculating to 5, not to 7. Energy management is part of the game. So, yes. He should have been better on that. But it was a bit grim to watch.
Yeah.
To just watch him get sharked. Yes. And I particularly felt Degrassi didn't really deserve that podium.
So, RJ, one of the things that was actually pretty nice to see watching from home on television was the new cable cam.
Oh, golly, that was so neat. And I had a look at the track itself. Yo, this track's got elevation. It's wide as hell. There's a lot of good passing opportunities, except at some hairpins of the circuit where you can easily pile up.
Don't get used to cable cam. this was a function of fascist architecture.
Yes. Height.
Like, don't get used to that.
But why can't we have it everywhere? Why can't we have it in Brooklyn?
Because the Allies won the war, RJ. Because the Allies won the war.
That's true.
If we can find a way to... I've got, like, a weird, like, tiny GoPro thing. Like, we can do it. we can try.
We can just attach it to a drone and
hopefully... We can go rogue. Like, I'm not saying that we won't either get arrested or attacked by the mob, but we can try it.
We can try.
It'll be like scrappy challenge cable cam. I'm up for that.
So
Dre, can you run us down the results of the Rome E-Prix?
Sure. I'm taking the backseat role for this episode.
I thought you died.
No, I was going to leave you guys to it. Don't mind me. Sandberg took the win in the end. Again, just under a second ahead of Lucas Degrassi in the end. In second, Andre Lotzer up. Good 9 seconds further back down the road in third. Daniel Apt in fourth, continuing his decent run of form and gets the bonus point for the fastest lap of the race as well. Our beloved Jev in fifth. Cross on times himself, Sebastian Buemi in sixth. Jerome D'Ambrosio for Dragon up there in seventh.
Jerome!
Nice to see Jerome up there again. Mauer Engel in eighth. Mitch Evans, that last lap kind of says it all. 140s, 141s.
Mitch,
across the field, and Mitch, 211.7 on that final lap. Again, kind of says it all, really. Ninth place for poor Mitch. Deserved so much better.
The internet was trying to give him a hug, and I was like, I don't see what good me person, hugging a sweaty person could possibly do other than making us both very unhappy. But, at the center stand of the field. But also, I feel like we failed to meet Alex Lynn.
Oh, gosh. Alex Lynn's race didn't really get going. He just got swiped off at the first...
Not RIP. Career and Formula E, potentially.
Gosh. How on a scale...
Dre, continue with the results.
Yeah, I was almost fine. Morata in 10th rounding off the points, then... We have Felix da Costa in 11th, Oliver Turvey in 12th, surprisingly quite down the field from the Nio team there, Luca Filippi in 13th, Nicholas Prost in 14th, Tom Blomqvist in 15th, Nick Heinfeld in 16th, Pacito himself in 17th, 4 laps off the top, and the 3 DNFs mentioned, Felix Rosenquist getting a little bit too friendly with the curb, Nelson Piquet getting a little bit too friendly with a loose seatbelt, and Alex Lynn, who, as mentioned, didn't really get going and took time out of his busy schedule of screaming in the car after putting it in the wall, the poor fella. Not the best weekend for him.
So on a scale of 1 to Marco Apicella at the 1993 Italian Grand Prix, how embarrassing is it to have potentially your final E-race colored by plowing into the back of your teammate during a multi-car pileup? Well, if you're Luca Filippi, you may have just experienced this, and now your seat's been taken by Ma Qing Ha.
I have two things to say about this. The Paris E-Prix is the most prominent E-Prix for Formula E sponsors. So they care about lots of things unless they're national-based. CBBB... CBMM Niobium wanted a Brazilian E-Prix, but they also sponsored the last two E-Prix in Uruguay and Rome. But if you are a significant sponsor, such as NIO, the Chinese car maker, then Paris is, for whatever reason, the big home race that you go berserk at. It's short of Monaco, this is where you go not. It is the one that is most incisive landmarks. It is the one that is most right next to the right in the heart of Paris. Les Infolites is really very in the center, right next to the Seine. It's a very, very central spectacular Berlin, Zurich, now in sector 2, which is sort of like round the lake, and even in Berlin we were way out of town, we weren't next to the Colosseum. And so Paris is like the very important one for your European sponsors or for anyone who's involved. Like, you cannot get accreditation or tickets to the Paris EP money at the moment. Like, I literally had somebody who is a sponsor of Mahindra on the phone to me earlier going like, oh my god, you have a spare ticket to the Paris EP, because I do random. I mean, I don't anymore, but he was like, I really, 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 really need that, because they are in such short supply that even the teams and sponsors can't get enough.
Oh dear.
Yikes.
But that's, I mean, it's great. It's like the Rome EPRI sold out in 30 minutes of tickets when they're really small. Like, this is fantastic for the series. But yeah, it's a, Paris is a big shot thing. So if they were going to put Marco and Carr in the car, now is the moment to do so. That doesn't, it's still the 68 car, it's still Luca's car. He will probably still be there. Nothing is about him being replaced, it's about Mar going into the car that race.
Yeah, like from what I've heard, it's only for this race.
Okay, I see.
As things stand, yes. Unless he amazingly astounds everyone, yes. As things stand, that's it, how it is.
Yeah, and there's nothing that's been on Ma's resume just yet.
That Neo are a Chinese-owned team. They are under tremendous pressure to put a Chinese driver in the car.
Yeah, and in fairness, Ma's done some great work in World Touring cars. He's still waiting on that first breakthrough Formula E result.
Yeah, so he will be the first person to drive for... Oh, no, sorry. I was told he'd be the first person to drive for three different Formula E teams. Bullshit. I would like to introduce you to one Jean-Eric Byrne. He's had a go with a few teams. He had a go with Aguri, he had a go with Tachita, and he will now have a go with Neo. Whether he can perform now, I don't know. He was faster in the simulator than Jean-Eric Byrne before Tachita launched with him. He was faster in the simulator than Jeff.
That is pretty nuts, especially given Formula E.
However, I would say, and I'm... So this sounds really judgy and really body judgy, and in a way I don't want to be, but most Formula E drivers are all lean muscle or incredibly hefty. So like Andre Lotterer is the only driver I could borrow a race suit from. And Jev is sort of like lean, but a lot more muscular than he was in the Toro Rosso years. Sam Bird, when you look at him, pure muscle. You look at Felix Rosenqvist, all muscle, like Lucas Segrassi and Sebastian Buemi have both had fast cars. Lucas has a solid muscle, the weight down, like if they have 2% body fat, I'd be amazed. And like that is what you need, because you have to be car round corner with no power steering that weighs nearly a ton, including you, and it probably weighs over a ton including you guys. Well, close to a ton including you if you're Andre size, because it's 880 minimum weight, and then you have to allow for the driver. The extent to which someone like Ma or Tom Blanc struggle with the car because they simply do not have the muscle mass to deal with it. And I think, honestly, Tom Blomqvist is struggling with the fact that he is not, because he's tiny. and his arms are tiny compared to mine. I think he's struggling because he just literally doesn't have the strength to pull the car.
So what you're saying is he needs to build up his muscle, get some gains.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Do some more squats.
Literally. Which I think is partly why Mitch Evans is so good at this, because he's used to the non-power steering F2 car.
Mitch Evans does not skip arm and shoulder day.
And also, he's a short guy who built up a lot of muscle. Like, he's, I don't know. I mean, I'm 5'10", and he's 4, 5, 6 inches shorter than me.
Like, jeez.
I mean, his height claims he's the same height as me, but he's at least 2 or 3 inches shorter than me.
Oh.
Even if we allow for a bit of like dehydration and compression during a race.
Oh, I assumed it was going with the pro wrestling booking of saying that you're taller than you actually are.
It helps.
I think, like, drivers do lose height during a race, though. Like, if you interview them on the Friday, they're taller than they are on the Saturday. But it's because they've been crunched in the car, they've been in an extreme stress position, they've, like, everything. Dehydration.
This is the final boarding call for passenger Jean-Eric Verne, booked on flight 372A to Berlin. Please proceed to gate 3 immediately. The final checks are being completed, and the captain will order the doors of the aircraft to close in approximately 5-minute time. I repeat, this is the final boarding call for Jean-Eric Verne. Thank you very much for flying Motorsport 101 Airlines.
Anyway, sorry, I don't want to keep you guys for any longer, but my final observation about the Rome E-Prix would be that I think it's an exceptional track. It's really good in terms of hairpins, in terms of very long, but the elevation was interesting. It's an intensely energy usage track, so that will be interesting how it shakes out with the Gen 2 car. Especially because they won't need to come into the amazingly long pit lane.
Right. There are 2,700 reasons to enjoy Rome, as you had written, Hazel.
Yeah, I mean, not to give myself a shout out, but just in case anyone who listens to this podcast is unaware of my work, I am the former e-journalist who likes to go that bit extra. So my editor was like, why didn't you write 11 things that were cool about the Rome E-Prix? And I was like, sure, that's a random number. Let me think of a different number. How old is Rome? Oh, Rome is 2,771 years old. So I'll just like write a toadistical of 2,771 things that are historic about the Rome E-Prix. I would like to thank some members of one for not just coming down and slapping me in my face when I was like, I've got two things left and I don't know what things are anymore. What are things? Things? No. But I did manage to do that. It's on DriveTribe. Please bump it, link it, give it more hits. I really need the hits and the money. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, I think we'll just about call it a wrap on that. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you guys can catch us one more time, we're on YouTube 101. Facebook.com/Motorsport101. We're on Twitter @Motorsport_101. Then our personal handles are @Harrison1HD, @RyanEricKing, @RJOConnell, and @HSouthwellFE. And if you're really, really lucky, so you can back us on Patreon, patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you ready access to both this show and to Bike Live. Thanks for Zoe for reminding me in the Discord. Don't forget to follow Chris as well at See the Hard A as well. Thanks for reminding me. But yeah, Five Bloods gets you ahead to both this show and to Bike Live again. That'll be back out later this week. BSB and WSBK reviews from Aragon and Brands Hatch, respectively. And maybe even some breaking news about Keenan Safog mentioned at the top of the show already. So keep half an eye out for that. Again, thank you very much for listening. And we'll catch you guys next time. I've been Andre Harrison. They've been Ryan King, RJ O'Connell, Chris DeHarde, and Hazel South. Until next time, sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Bye.
Woo-hoo! Dude, I got you!
Vertical has done it, mate.
I cannot believe it.